Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
We can destroy them by burning them. And we can destroy them with dragon glass. If we don't win this fight, then that is the fate of every person in the world. There is only one war that matters. The Great War. And it is here.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Steve.
And this is House Podcastica.
This week, we have reached the end of our series rewatch with Season 7, Episode 7, The Dragon and the Wolf. Next Sunday night, we'll gather and our watch will begin once again.
And anybody who recognizes this voice means that you have been with us for the entire rewatch, because we do have fan favorite, host favorite, first watch of the first watch, Mr. Steve Brown has graced us with his presence to guest host this concluding week of our rewatch. Welcome, Steve.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited. I've been waiting for this the entire time since the rewatch began. And I don't want to get into too much, but I did want to make a comment, if I could,
sure,
about why I think this watch for me was so special. And I realized something, and I want to credit you and all the other guest hosts that you've had, because they've helped me out a lot with understanding things about the show and about the episodes. And one thing that I noticed consistently that I didn't have was I didn't have a bias, or not bias is probably the wrong word. I didn't have a negative feeling toward Jaime Lannister and Theon Greyjoy, because I came into it where I had watched the first three and four and a half seasons and then stopped and didn't pick it up until you guys came out of your hiatus with the last episode of season four, I think.
Yeah, Red Wedding.
Right. So I had no negative, I remembered Jaime pushing Bran out of the window. I knew that it happened, but I didn't really have any kind of negative feelings toward him. I've just seen his redemption, his journey of redemption that he's been taking.
Okay.
And and so it didn't, I wasn't negatively looking at him. And the same with Theon. I came upon Theon. I don't even remember what Theon did that people don't like him about.
I could enlighten you.
You know, no, go ahead. But that's what I'm saying is I don't remember it. So all I've seen is the broken and, you know, beaten Theon that is trying to crawl out of this hole that he's been in. And I guess it's in this episode. I don't have it in my notes, but we'll get to what happens in this episode with him.
Yeah, so I'm so glad. Well, I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so glad that months ago, I had emailed you and I asked you if you wanted to do the final episode of the rewatch, because then I would know, okay, he's seen the whole thing. We could be as spoilery as we want to, and you could talk, you know, you could talk like you had seen the whole series as well. And I think that it's been a really good idea to have you on for this episode. So I'm just really pleased that we were able to work this out. It is 9:30 in the morning, but I had a little mini bottle of Jameson, and I have now poured it into my coffee because I wanted to celebrate that we have finished the rewatch. And so this is something I've just been waiting on. So just all of you out there listening, imagine me at 9 o'clock in the morning having myself an Irish coffee.
Very nice. I've got my coffee as well. It's not Irish today, but I've got my coffee as well.
You're like, it's Irish enough.
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm going to say this because we say it every single episode. This is a spoiler-full podcast. Since we've reached the end of this thing, we're going to go on with the intention that you've seen all the episodes, since this is the last known episode of Game of Thrones before season 8 begins. So today's episode is season 7, episode 7, The Dragon and the Wolf. I cannot believe we're here. And we assume that you've seen every episode from season 1, episode 1, Winter is Coming. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Steve, and why don't you tell me what your first, your number 5 is for your top 5?
Gladly, thank you so much. Sure. John did not mention that Valyrian steel kills the White Walkers or the Whites or whichever one it was that he shattered. He only mentions fire and dragonglass when he's talking to Cersei about the weapons that can defeat these things. And I thought that was interesting. I didn't take note of it until the second or third time watching it. But I was like, why didn't he mention Valyrian steel? Because he knows that Valyrian steel. So what do you think?
I was one of two thoughts about it. One is that there's less than 10 Valyrian steel swords known in Westeros. So there isn't really a lot to work with as far as Valyrian steel goes. So if you have one, it could become some sort of a coveted item for the war to come.
Okay.
Kind of like, you know, looting when the riots happen. And then the other thought that I had was maybe he was nervous that somebody would try and steal Longclaw from him.
Okay.
Disarm him.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I kind of took the same thing, but at the same point of kind of just keeping that, I don't know, it just felt like it was an omission, you know, that he was blatantly making. I don't know. But that's a good point. He could have just been, he might have just not even thought about it too, because like you said, there are so few of them out there.
Yeah. I think I've had a discussion with Rennie in the past about really what's out there. And when you really look at kind of what's out there, there aren't a lot, and a lot of them you don't even know where they are.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if they touch on this in season 8. If we do see Dawn, which is the sword that Arthur Dayne had, which is the sword that Ned brought into Jon's birthing room with the star on the pommel.
Right.
That is supposed to be at Starfall. Starfall is right. House Dayne's castle. So I don't know if that's going to be brought in. I don't know if maybe Helen Reed has the sword and we don't know it. I'd like to see. I would love to see Howland Reed in next season, like so much, because we know that he was very badly wounded in that last fight between Arthur Dayne, Ned Stark, and Howland Reed at the Tower of Joy. And there's, you know, he hasn't been seen, but he does have, you know, he did have two kids, and Mira went back to go be with her father. So I'm hoping that we see the Reed family in this next season.
Yeah, that would be exciting.
Anyways, go on. I'm sorry.
No, that was it. That was just the fact that kind of that omission of Valyrian steel being able to kill. And is it so? Help me out, because there's the dead things. They can be brought back by any of the Whites.
No, so they can be brought back by the White Walkers.
Okay, okay.
So the Whites are just
like the zombies. Okay,
yes.
Okay, the White Walkers are like the lieutenants of the Night King.
Yes.
Okay, and those guys, they can raise up, just like the Night King can raise up people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so if you kill the White Walker, then apparently all the people that he's risen, dust.
That was an interesting revelation in Beyond the Wall, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. And that's what I was thinking about with Viserion, is does that mean that if Jon or somebody kills the Night King, I hate to say this, but does that mean Viserion will just kind of crumble to dust?
I mean, unless he has Doctor Strange's time stone, I think that that's probably the case.
Yeah, unfortunately. Unfortunately.
I think that no matter which way we look at it, Viserion is lost.
Yeah, okay.
Which breaks my heart. That was a tough one, watching Viserion die
and
be on the wall and having to watch it again and again and then podcast on it.
Yeah, yeah. And I just watched it again last night. Like I was saying, I watched them back to back last night. So
My number five, we'll just keep with this theme and we'll just talk about the, I called it the Westeros G5 Summit. So something that I love about this entire thing, and we'll probably talk about this entire meeting throughout this episode, but Jon, it seems to me, Jon Snow has been practicing his final presentation for over a season now. You know, he goes from house to house saying, the Night King is coming. Death is coming. There's only one thing that matters, and that's the Great War. And he's been saying it and saying it and saying it to everybody. But this meeting, this summit meeting, seems to be his final presentation. And man, he nails it. Like, he stands up, he's all cloaked, he starts giving his speech, then he has his visual presentation with the Hound.
The Hound kicks that box over, you know. I love it. Yeah.
and then you know, he has Davos come out and flints the little fire stick there, and he, you know, lights the hand on fire. Then he takes the dragon glass out, or dragon glass, and he stabs the White with the dragon glass. And then he says, "What's the last line that he says?"
Oh no, I can't remember.
I just have in my notes, Jon nails the last line, but his last line is something like, "The Great War is here. And it's here now," right? And it's just like, I could just imagine him being like, nailed it. Like,
yeah, yeah. There was so much theater in that whole meeting, yeah. You know, from Euron Greyjoy making his little jibes at Tyrion, and then, you know, leaving in a huff, which, you know, his Oscar level performance of, and I think, I don't know if I had this in my voicemail or not, I don't remember, but I remember thinking at the time going, is he really leaving? Like, really? Like, so yeah, there was so much theater, but I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good way to put it, that Jon really had prepared that presentation he had, and he just nailed it. That's really good.
It's just, I was laughing throughout the entire thing last night when I did my notes watch of this. I was just, I don't know, maybe I had a couple glasses of wine or something like that, but I just found the whole thing hilarious, just only because we've been watching this poor guy saying the same speech over and over and over again. And finally you realize, well, he was preparing for this final huge meeting. I mean, everybody's there. Everybody's there. And he has this one opportunity to really get everybody on his side. And from my perspective as a viewer, having seen the journey of every single one of these characters, you know, and they're all, we know them probably better than any of them know each other in that meeting.
Yeah.
Right? Because we followed them for so long. And when you see the Hound take the top off of that box, this is a man that's never been scared of. He's scared of one thing. It's fire. That's it. That's the only time we've ever seen him really like clench up.
Right.
With fire. He is so nervous and just rattled at what is in this box.
Yeah.
And Jaime notices that. You know, you see that Jaime's like, okay, did anybody notice that the Hound is a little nervous here?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that whole presentation Jon gives, he really, the person who he meant to hit the hardest was Cersei, but it ends up being Jaime being the one that he really convinces.
That's right. You're totally right. My favorite look that he gave was when Daenerys told him that there was 100,000 of them.
And yeah.
Pace looked like he actually soiled himself in that moment.
Yeah. The other thing I like about that meeting, and I wrote it down in my notes for later, was when Podrick and Bronn are having their little conversation, and Bronn says, you know, let's go to drink, Podrick, and let the fancy people talk. Brienne gives Podrick a nod. And mm-hmm. Podrick takes that as, okay, I can go. And what I put in my notes was, it's interesting that the actor problems is what prompted that scene to have to be written in for mm-hmm. Bronn to leave, you know, because he and Lena Headey can't be in the same, whatever, room together.
Yeah, it was written into their contracts. But at that point, they were actually fine with each other. They had resolved their differences. But because the contract specifically said that they couldn't, they had to abide by the contract.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fair.
But you know what? It was written very naturally in. If you didn't know the story behind it, you would not have noticed.
Oh, yeah. No, and I didn't even think about it. In fact, when I read in the IMDb or read in trivia somewhere, it said that he left the scene. I went, did he? I don't remember him leaving. And it wasn't until I watched the episode again. They go, oh, yeah, he and Podrick go get a drink. Yeah, it was very natural.
So some other things about this summit. So I wanted to make a diagram, but then I realized nobody can see my diagram. So I just listed some things out. And, you know, you have all these named characters that have happened upon King's Landing in this dragon pit, which is very, very appropriately placed. Mm-hmm. You know, Cersei was very, very savvy in having the meeting be at the Dragon Pit as a reminder that the Targaryens have fallen mm-hmm. and that she is on top, but she's not. So the first time, so we have a lot of weird little dynamics. This was Jon Snow, Daenerys, Theon and Missandei's first time ever in King's Landing. You have Tyrion, Jorah, and Sandor all coming back after previously leaving in some sort of exile or shame. You have the first meeting of Daenerys and Cersei, Jon and Cersei, and Euron and Tyrion. You have uncomfortable reunions in Tyrion and Cersei, the Hound and the Mountain, Euron and Theon, and Jaime, Cersei, and Brienne, which was a very interesting little exchange of looks there.
Yeah.
And then you have a positive reunion between Tyrion and Bronn and Brienne and the Hound. So there's so much going on just non-verbally.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote some of that down in my notes as well, all these reunions. And we see the Tyrion-Podrick reunion there, where they talked briefly before going to the pit, right? Was it Podrick? Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, you're right. Tyrion, I didn't even write that down nicely.
They have their little exchange. I hadn't realized, again, some of those characters that hadn't been there, you know. And what is it? Jon asks Tyrion how many people are in King's Landing, and he says 1 million.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's more than the entire North, or something like that. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little inconsistent with the books, but that's okay. You know, the North is supposed to have 3 to 4 million people. The last time anybody spoke about King's Landing, it was 500,000. But I guess it could be explained that there's a lot of refugees from the war that have come into King's Landing. So it's possible that it has expanded to 1 million people. You know, people say that it's a terrible place to live if you're not, you know, royalty. I can see that. Another thing that I found really funny in this was the fact that I think this is the first time, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the first time we see Jon in the sun.
Oh, wow. That seems likely.
And he seems super overdressed.
Yeah. You know, he's so in his North garb. But like you said, he was preparing for this presentation, so he had to be garbed appropriately. You know, and it was, as I watched Beyond the Wall last night, I know this is about the last episode, but I had that same thought that whichever listener it was, nobody wears hats. Why does nobody have a hat on? Yeah, no, you're right. He's probably way overdressed for for what he's doing.
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, people that are from Canada, right? People that live in the deep north of Canada, they probably come down to Boston and they're like, it's bikini weather right yeah. now, right? So it was so funny to me that John wasn't just in like a shirt.
Yeah.
You know, like he's like, how do you guys do it down here? It's so hot.
That does make sense.
I would have loved it if he did that. If he, like, in the middle of his presentation, he's like, I gotta get this cloak off. It's, like, fucking hot here.
Stupid thing. Yeah. Why am I still wearing this?
Yeah. So I'm sure that we'll talk more about this summit, but what was your number four?
My number four is, and some people are gonna get this reference, my sister-in-law makes me watch White Christmas almost every year, and my number four was No Mister Gets in Between the Stark Sisters. So.
Oh, nice.
So I really like that whole thing and that exchange in there. That when Sansa tells them to bring Arya to the great hall, and Littlefinger's just got that little smile on his face because he thinks, oh, this is it, this is my chance, or this is, you know, my plan has come to fruition. The Stark sisters hate each other. She's gonna kill one of them is gonna kill the other, and you know, I wonder. Part of me wondered if Littlefinger's plan might have been hoping that Arya would kill Sansa and then Sansa's guards would kill Arya and then he could just take Winterfell.
That would be a good thought, except that would have been big oversight in Jon Snow eventually is going to come back.
Right. Oh, no, for sure. For sure. Yeah, it would have been a big misstep on Littlefinger's part because, you know, the brother's going to come back and he's, what? You know, I just got my sisters back and... Now,
and he already hates Littlefinger.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my number four. Just very simple that nobody's going to get in between those two. And I really liked that bond because I think I'd even put in because I didn't pick up on all the stuff that you guys were picking up on that there was no rift. They were just faking it and all that. I didn't pick up on that at all. I really thought there was a rift developing between Sansa and Arya. And I was really scared for Arya in this scene. Until, you know, of course, until as soon as Sansa starts listing off all the charges and I'm like, wait a minute. And then she does her, and I put this in my notes because I think Sophie Turner has the best side eye acting of any actor out there. She does that little side eye, Lord Baelish, you know.
Best moment ever. So tell me about, because you just watched that. You basically watched that for the first time recently.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about that scene?
I loved it, and it confused me a little bit because I had, you know, I don't care about spoilers. It doesn't bother me. And so, and maybe I had just, I don't know. I was like going, wait a minute. Arya is supposed to kill Littlefinger. Doesn't she bake him into a pie? Like, this is how my misunderstanding of the spoilers that I even the spoilers that I get, I misunderstand them. Right. You know, I'm like, I thought she baked Littlefinger into a pie. I thought that's what they said. So that part of me was just like, did I mishear something? Or, but then of course, as soon as she started listing off the charges, I was like, oh, she's going to turn the tables and she's going to call out Littlefinger and then Arya's going to kill him. Because then, like, the second time I watched it, I'd already, you know, already knew it was going to happen. But I noticed the knife. I didn't notice the dagger before in Arya's belt. But then I see it the second time watching. I go, oh, I should have seen that in the beginning, that she was carrying the dagger that she had given to her sister just in the last episode.
Right.
You know, right. And so, yeah.
I think I said that last week.
You did on the podcast.
Did I? Okay.
Yeah, you guys made a point.
I can't remember because it's a recent revelation that I had that should have been a big clue for us.
Right. And you mentioned that on the podcast that she gave it back. And so when I watched these back to back last night, I noticed, yeah, she does. She flips the thing around and gives it to Sansa. And then she actually, not only does she give it to Sansa, she turns her back to Sansa.
Interesting. You're right. She does.
So really that should have been just a huge clue that they trusted each other, you know. And did I mishear that was Littlefinger's, that was his knife?
Yes.
So she killed him with his own knife. That's like the ultimate insult right there. Not only is the little girl got you on your knees and gonna slit your throat, but she's gonna slit your throat with your own knife. So
When he got on his knees, I think that that was just the best moment of the whole series on a first time watch, because he's the cause of everything,
Yeah, and all the way back, right?
Yeah, you know, when he realizes that he's not only is he out of options, he's penned in. I mean, the whole hall is lined with people, and nobody is going to budge for him.
Nobody's going to help him. No.
Yeah, and he gets on his knees, and you just know at that point, you're like, yes, it's about to happen. Yep,
exactly.
I remember I was in my cousin's living room, and we were all sitting there, and everybody's either standing up or has their hands in the air. It was a really strange, if anybody was taking a picture, everybody's staring at the television with just appendages in the air waiting for it to happen. And then she slits his throat, and the whole room erupts into cheers. It was just like a triumphant moment. Yeah. It was almost like we won, you know?
exactly. And that shot, that camera shot of him as it comes up, and you see his body there and the blood is kind of pooling out. And I'm like, the only thought I had was, dang, somebody's had to clean that up. But
right. Well, that's what servants are for.
Exactly. So what was your?
But I'm so glad that she. Well, my number four is actually Bye Bye Birdie. So I used a different musical reference,
right?
So yeah, I was just kind of piggybacking on you with it. But I loved it that she slit his throat, because to me it means that she might use his face in season 8, which is something I've wanted for a while.
I hadn't thought about that. That's good.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they can, you know, that the Stark girls, like there's a conversation in the Great Hall where they say, news of Littlefinger's death needs to stay quiet.
Yeah.
We need to not tell anybody, because if Arya can use Littlefinger's face to get down to King's Landing and get a private meeting with Cersei.
There you go. Now you've just put the plan in place of how this. That's good. That's good.
I've wanted that for a while. That's one of two ways I want Cersei to die. Either way, Arya does it.
Yeah.
But I either want it to happen with Littlefinger's face or with Jaime's face. But it means that Jaime has to die.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that character, and I like the road to redemption that we've had for him. You know, that shot of him riding his horse out and Cersei saying, well, you're a traitor if you go. And he's like, no, I'm going to keep my word, was really good. That I didn't have that in my notes, but that's a really good conversation where she reveals to him that she's just lied and schemed. So.
Cersei's the worst.
She's the worst.
She is the worst. Wendy, Cersei is the worst. I think another clue that Littlefinger was doomed in this episode is also when Littlefinger and Sansa are having that discussion in the separate scene earlier in the episode after she gets Jon's scroll.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the thing about wanting, he plays a little game and what are everybody's intentions. And then he gets Sansa to eventually say, oh, Arya would be Lady of Winterfell. Arya has never wanted to be lady of anything ever in her entire life.
No, from the and that's like I said, that's another clue that we should have gotten from the previous episode, right? When she was talking about the fact that you were in with your fancy dresses, and I was out here with the one arrow shooting it at the target. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's really good. That's another one of those moments that we should have got where they're still sisters. They're still gonna stay together.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of moments like that where, you know, when you're first watching it, last year or 2 years ago, I guess now that it is. Wow, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
When you're first watching it, you're just trying so hard to wrap your head around this, because Littlefinger has been the Teflon Man for 7 seasons.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility that he's going to get a win over the Stark girls. So it isn't until this final moment when she says Lord Baelish that we realize we were right. It was a plan. Oh my gosh, it actually happened. He actually finally got what he needed or what he deserved.
Yeah. And somebody did to him what he's been doing, you know, this show. You know, she tricks him basically into thinking that he succeeded in his plan.
I actually read somewhere that with Littlefinger's death, the War of the Five Kings is finally over.
Oh, okay. See, that's
since
one of
he started it.
That's yeah, and that's one of those things that because I didn't go back and rewatch seasons 1 through 3, I wouldn't have picked up on that. But yeah, that's a good thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, they kind of lead you into that by reminding us that he convinced Liza Aaron to murder John Aaron, and then he murdered Liza Aaron.
Right.
He's the one that told Liza to send the fake information to mm-hmm. Ned and Catelyn, which started the whole Stark and Lannister rift, which started, you know, the war, which ended Ned's life, which ended Rob's life, which sent everybody in the directions that they sent. I mean, Littlefinger is the yeah. one that basically spearheaded the entire thing. He's like the Joker. I know that we've said this a couple of times, but he is the Joker of Westeros. I mean, he thrives on chaos. He just wants to watch the world burn.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that makes total sense. Well, he wants to watch the world burn and be the one, you know, the Joker, Caesar, he wants to be the guy. You know,
the one that rules over the ashes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. That was my number 4 was Bye Bye Birdie. So okay. What was your number 3?
Well, my number 3 is that image at the end. It's kind of jumping to the end of the episode. But the ice dragon. How did I write it? The ice dragon burning the wall and the wall toppling down and then the dead marching across and just all that thing. And on top of that, the fact that we're seeing it through Bran's eyes as he's warging, is that the word? Warging mm-hmm. into a raven or ravens or whatever. And so I thought it's just a great shot. And the way we see it is, it almost makes you wonder is because he can't see into the future, right? He can only see the present and the past.
Yeah.
So that's happening right then while he's watching it. We assume, anyway, I guess it could be past, but he's watching that happen and we're seeing all those guys and they're running and I'm wondering how they're even going to survive that wall coming down.
Yeah, is Tormund alive?
Yeah, that was what I put in my notes was how is Tormund going to live through that? I mean, I want him to live through this because I love the character and I want to see that. I want to at least see Brienne shoot him down. But if she does, I don't know. We'll see. You know, the great monster babies. We're going to make monster babies that'll take over the world.
I love Tormund so much. So,
yeah. And I just, all those guys, you just wonder. And then the other question that comes from that is if Tormund doesn't survive, does that mean we see him as a white?
No.
Sorry.
Oh no. That would, you know what? That would actually devastate me, I'm pretty sure.
That would be rough. Yeah.
You know, he's another one of those characters where he wasn't a villain at the beginning, but he was a savage.
Yeah.
He was, you know, almost like he was feral. And slowly through the death of Mance Rayder, his friendship, his respect level and ultimate friendship and brotherhood with John and his loyalty to John with the Battle of the Bastards and Hardhome and East and manning the wall and then going beyond the wall and going on the White Hunt. Everything that he's done, I mean, you see the kind of man that Tormund is. I mean,
right.
He may have been a savage. He may have been feral beyond the wall, but he's always been the same guy.
Yeah.
He's a fierce warrior. He's loyal to the bone. He loves who he loves. He's always been comical. I mean, he talked about having sex with a bear.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
we first met him.
Well, he talked about having sex with the other guys on the beyond the wall. He's like, well, whoever's available, you know.
That was the best moment. Gendry's face. Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah. And the whole discussion with the hound about dick and cock, you know.
Like he's like, I like it.
It just, that whole exchange, it was so great when I watched it again, in just that the playful way. You can see the hound isn't having it, but Tormund's all about that joking kind of thing. So mm-hmm.
Well, and he's another character like the Hound, except, you know, where we know the Hound has his weakness is fire. We haven't seen Tormund have a weakness. Mm-mm. He's not afraid of anything.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything that he's afraid of.
No, and he says, what is it? The Hound asks, how come you're still alive? And he says, because I'm good at killing, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm really good at what I do or yep. good at killing. But I thought that it was really important to just kind of point out that he yells as Viserion flies towards the wall. He yells at everybody to run.
Yeah.
He's frightened.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time that we see him frightened.
I would say he was frightened when he was falling into the water and he was yelling out for help.
Okay, yeah.
But I thought
he was dead.
Yeah, you're right that's he was definitely aware of what was about to happen.
Oh man, you know, he's had a couple close calls. He had a really close call at the Battle of the Bastard.
Yeah, somebody made the comment about Jon being a bad like he's a good individual fighter, but when it comes to big group fights, it seems like he's always on the losing end of the big gigantic group fights.
Okay, but we could also argue that he takes the impossible fights.
There is that. You are correct on that. So
nobody else is going beyond the wall to go fight the suicide mission battle that yeah. he's like, well, I guess this is what we're doing today.
You're right. Okay.
Poor guy. I just feel so bad for him. He's like, everybody's like, who's going to go and do this? And like, you can almost see everybody behind him taking a step backwards.
Yeah.
And he's the only one left.
Not me.
I guess that's me. Poor Longclaw. I bet Longclaw is just dull
yeah.
at this point.
But that is a great, watching them back to back, that is such a great image when it comes on and you see Longclaw on the ice and then Jon's hand comes out of the water and he pulls himself out. That's such a great scene right there.
Do you have anything else for your number three? Oh,
that was it.
So my number three is the liberation of Jaime Lannister. I am so happy that he finally rode away from Cersei.
Yeah.
It was interesting to me. Cersei seemed more conflicted about having Tyrion killed than Jaime. Did you get that vibe?
Yeah, it really surprised me. That was another one of those moments, and I didn't put this in my notes, but now that you got me thinking about it, that was one of those moments where I wondered, like, obviously the Mountain has some kind of, he understands her, because there's almost a moment where I thought he was going to cut him down. You know, or he was mm-hmm. going to pop his head off or something, you know, because I was like, why would you waste your steel when you could? But no. I think you are. I think in that moment, because I think, and I don't know why that would be, but I agree that it definitely looked like she would have been more comfortable killing Jaime than killing Tyrion in that moment. Because I think it's because with Jaime, it would have been, it is a blatant disrespect to her. And he's never done that before. Like you said, he's never broken free. And it's almost like, and I don't want to trigger anything for anybody. It's almost like when someone's trying to get out of an abusive situation
mm-hmm.
and the abuser doesn't want to let them go.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right on this. You're not triggering at all. You're just speaking truth.
And I think that's what we have here is we have Cersei not wanting to let go, almost that where she's going to be willing to kill him to not let him go.
You know what? That's a really great point, because that's an unfortunate statistic of domestic violence, of, you know, domestic abuse is the fact that when the abused decides to break free and decides to stand up for themselves, that's when they actually get hurt.
Right.
So that's a great point, because I sat there and I'm watching her and she nods at the Mountain
mm-hmm.
like to do it. And I think all of us were Jaime in that moment where you just look at her and it's like, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
I am this, I, I'm, I mean so little to you that you're willing to do this. And then he says the best words ever. I don't believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And walks away. That was another triumphant moment in this episode.
So I think you're right, because it would have been easy to kill, you know, killing Tyrion, and everybody would have expected it. And I think that's part of Cersei's deal, is she doesn't want to do what's expected.
You know, I also took it as that he's still family, and she still actually respects him. She lives by her own set of morals and standards, and I think she recognizes that Tyrion does as well. This is why I'm very interested in what the hell happened in the final moments of that talk between Cersei and Tyrion. What exactly was said? Because when Jon lied, he didn't lie. When Jon refused to lie mm-hmm. about where his allegiances were, and the meeting fell apart after that, Tyrion said, look, I get what you did, but did it ever occur to you to lie? Just a bit. Just lie a little bit, right? And he said that words need to mean something, blah, blah, blah. And then Tyrion goes to talk to Cersei. Now, here's where it gets tricky, is that Tyrion knows how to play the game. He knows how to lie just enough that it doesn't dishonor him. Cersei doesn't give a shit what she says.
Right.
Anytime, anywhere, doesn't matter. She just says stuff until she gets it, until she gets what she wants. So with that dynamic coming out of the Sept, it makes me wonder, okay, well, Cersei's saying these words, and for some reason, Jon and Daenerys are believing her because they trust Tyrion. Mm-hmm. But what does Tyrion know that nobody else knows?
Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure. Now I want to go back and watch that scene again, because it does make you wonder, was there something more that went on between the two of them in that discussion?
Well, I like it that they leave it open, too. You know, the writers leave that open to maybe even play with in season 8. I mean, it, mm-hmm. it could come to nothing, but it is an open door to possibly have an added layer of betrayal or misdirection mm-hmm. or something like that to add to the story in this final season. So I'm really excited to see what happens next.
Part of that discussion leads right into my number two.
Cool.
Which is Jaime's, when he's talking to Brienne. Or when Jaime's talking to Cersei, he uses the same some of the same words and the same argument that Brienne uses with him, in that it's not about nobility, it's not about houses, it's about human life. And then he says almost the exact same thing when he's talking to Cersei. And it occurred to me that I think that was part of what convinced him to go and help. And he was hoping that that would convince Cersei. It was that same argument, but that wasn't. She's not going to hear that. She doesn't, like you said.
She doesn't have the same feelings that Jaime does.
No. She wants to rule, and she doesn't care if it's over the ashes. She doesn't care. You know, what is his, he says, if we don't go help them and they defeat the Night King, then they're going to come and kill us because we didn't help. And if we don't help them and they lose, the Night King's going to come and he's going to kill us. So basically, we're all going to be killed. Unless we do this, we're going to get killed. And she was still convinced that, no, she could win. You know.
And that really proves how far gone she is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, she is the Mad Queen.
She's arrogant.
And
yeah.
If it wasn't Cersei... Oh, this is an interesting question. If it wasn't Cersei that was saying these things, would Jaime have killed her to protect humanity like he did with Aerys?
Oh, so you're saying like if he... Yeah, but who else would he be having that conversation with? Who else would be in that position? I don't know. I see what you're saying, though. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Well, I don't think he would have killed his own son. You think he would have killed his own son? I don't think so.
Joffrey was a dick.
Now, that's true. Okay. So maybe at that point. I definitely agree with you. If it was any other, if he was confidant to anyone else who's king or queen at that point and was saying those things that they had just lied in this meeting, purposely, you know, and she tells him the whole thing. She says, no, Euron's going to go. He's going to go pick up the Golden Company and he's going to bring them back on his ships. And we're going to, you know, win this thing. And so I think you're right. I think if it was anybody else, if it was Euron, say it was Euron and somebody else had gone to go get the Golden Company, yeah, he would have cut him down in a heartbeat. This is the thing about Jaime that I think in his redemption arc that we've seen is he's taken the single focus that he had, that he's taken the willingness and the part of his character that was able to push a boy out of a window. He has that same single focus when it comes to any, and that protecting the realm, whether it's killing the king or, yeah, he's going to be willing to do that. He's going to have that single focus.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to that. You know, him pushing Bran out of the window in that very first episode proves how deep he is in with Cersei from the very beginning. When we learn why Jaime killed Aerys, because Aerys was going to kill hundreds of thousands of people, and he decided to take on the brunt of being known as a Kingslayer, if it meant that he saved the realm, then he was going to do that. If he had to push Bran out of the window to save, essentially, you could say, to save the realm. I mean, it was to hide Cersei and Jaime's secret. Mm-hmm. But if that had gotten out, the legitimacy of the future of their house would be in question. The kids would all of a sudden be scrutinized.
Yeah.
And that could ultimately lead to, you know, where we are now. Fast forward to the end here, and you see that Cersei is out of control.
Mm-hmm.
She's blown up the Sept. She's killed countless people, all for power. And now she's going to go against a pledge that she made in this impossible task before them. And it's almost like it was a breaking point for him.
Yeah, I was just going to say that was the straw. That her breaking that pledge was the straw. Everything else that she did, you could kind of chalk up to, yes, she's vile, she's evil. She's doing it, though, to solidify her power and protect the realm.
Mm-hmm.
But this breaking of this pact, that's not going to protect the realm. That's not going to... So
interesting. Yeah. So it would protect the realm to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is it? Do you want to protect the realm or do you want to protect humanity?
Right. Exactly. That's what... I think that's what where we see Jaime, he shifts to understanding that this is not about... Like he said, like Brienne said to him, and like he said to Cersei, it's not about houses, it's not about lands and realms, it's about the world at this point. And so for him, it was that breaking, it was finally that thing that he's able to break free of the hold she has on him.
And thank goodness for that.
Yes.
When he reappears on that horse without any Lannister garb on him and he covers up his golden hand... Oh, man.
Yeah.
Now all we need is we need the Merle hand.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I still wonder why, you know, it's one of those, I guess he doesn't have the flexion with the metal hand, but I kind of thought, why couldn't you just put like a sword on the hand?
They're going to make him a dragon glass sword hand.
There you go.
I know it.
I'm literally waving my hand around like nobody can see me. That would make sense with someone who was a great sword fighter, who's lost his hand, just make his whole arm a sword.
I just hope that he's well received at Winterfell. I have a stomach ache about the possible reception at Winterfell.
The only thing that might help him is going to be that, right, Jon and Daenerys should beat him there. And so if they're already there and they see him arrive, they'll know that he's keeping the pledge. And he can then tell them that Cersei has broken the pledge, you know? So.
Oh, ooh. Ooh.
So.
I like it.
Yeah. So that might save his life, hopefully.
I hope the very first episode is just like reunions. Just one reunion after another.
Yeah.
Like all the fan service that we could possibly dream up for 1 hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we can get on with the rest of the season. Well,
and like I've said before, and you've said it, I can't wait for the Sansa Tyrion reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty sure, now you can correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure he has not been with another woman.
Oh no. So what, you think that they're still technically married?
I mean, they never consummated, so no, but maybe that's what I'm saying in his mind. I wonder if he's still keeping that watch. Because as far as we know, he's not, like I said, he's not been with anyone. As far as we know, I mean, there could have been off-screen stuff that we don't know about, but...
Well, when they were, when he escaped and they were in Pentos and they went to that brothel, mm-hmm. him and Varys went to that yeah. brothel, which was one of the greatest scenes for Varys ever. I remember he said that he couldn't, but it was because he had just killed Shay. So
we'll see. I don't know. It just, it's one of those things that I just thought, because of the way this watch has gone, I just was noticing that is that mm-hmm. he, I don't, so anyway.
My number two is, and I'm sure this is, maybe this is your number one, maybe not. And that is, I labeled it, I named everything this week for some reason. I was feeling very prosy, was A Family Affair. We learn a lot about the Targaryens in this one, I think. First of all, is this the first time that you learned that Jon Snow was Aegon Targaryen, or was that spoiled for you?
I remember reading something about that she was his aunt somewhere, like a while ago. But I was like, huh, how does that work? I'm still not sure how that works. So I was kind of spoiled that I knew there was something with his birth.
Rhaegar was Daenerys's brother.
Okay, is that the brother that we meet? That's not the brother that we meet at the beginning. Who was the guy that sold her to Drogon?
That was Viserys.
Okay, okay.
Rhaegar was going to be king after Aerys, except that Aerys was crazy,
mm-hmm.
and Rhaegar was married to Elia Martell. He passed up, I'm sure you know all of this, he passed up Elia at a tournament, shoot, I'm forgetting the tournament, and gave his rose when he won the tournament. He gave his rose to Lyanna Stark, which was a huge scandal. And Robert Baratheon was betrothed to Lyanna Stark, and he was very much in love with her. Lyanna Stark disappears, and the story was for many years that Rhaegar kidnapped Lyanna, raped her, and then killed her.
Okay.
But we find out over the seasons that. And then you find out definitively in this episode that the whole thing was based on a lie, that Lyanna was in love with Rhaegar. Rhaegar had his marriage to Elia annulled.
Right. Yeah. So all that stuff before that you just said before the annulment of the marriage, I didn't know all that. I didn't know the details of it. So it wasn't spoiled to me specifically who he was and how he was. So, like, when we see the scene, like you were talking about with Reed and when Ned Stark gets the baby, and we find out that baby is Jon Snow, and then he brings it home, brings the child home to raise as his bastard son. When that all happened in that episode, that's when I started getting the understanding that Jon was not a Stark, or was not the Stark that we thought he was. Okay. does that make sense? He wasn't Ned Stark's biological son. I'll mm-hmm. put it that way. That's when I started to get that understanding. And so it's not until this episode that I find out the specifics where, and this is, I kind of started to put this in my notes and I stopped, but I thought it was really interesting that Bran can control his visions because Sam says, you know, Sam is telling him this whole thing. I read it in the Maester's personal diary, so it must be true. Can you look back and see what happened? And then we see Bran go back in time and he's actually watching the wedding.
I think that a couple things are happening there. One is that we're learning that Bran is able to control how he sees his visions, mm-hmm. Which he couldn't control, you know, at the beginning of the season. So we see that he's actually come a really long way in his own training. And it's probably, you know, the fact that he's at home, he's warm, he's fed.
Right.
He's got a little chair.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's not a tree. He's not growing exactly. into a wall. He's, yeah. yeah. So he's able to actually stretch and exercise and figure these things out. So that was what I took away from that scene.
Yeah. And I think that if somebody tells him specifically what to look for, he could probably it might be going through a Rolodex or something, mm-hmm. right? Just like,
yeah.
And finding it and then going to it.
Yeah. Well, because then he goes back to the scene where Ned gets the baby, and that's where we hear the name.
Yeah. You know,
when she whispers the name to Ned, and Ned's like, whatever, I'm naming the kid what I want to name the kid, you know? And
well, there's no way that he could name him.
Right. No, he couldn't. But it just is one of those things that it's to us, it's important.
Yeah. You know, here's the deal. In no universe is Jon Snow Aegon Targaryen to me. It sounds foreign.
Right.
I really, really hope that they don't start calling him Aegon Targaryen.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting conversation. And I don't know if we'll get it in the very first episode or not, because basically what's going to have to happen, right, is Sam is going to have to go and either tell, I guess he's going to tell Jon. He wouldn't have an audience with Daenerys to tell her. It would make more sense that he would go to Jon. So
let's talk about this just for 1 second. Sam, and I watched this specifically this morning, mm-hmm. to see what Sam did. Sam took the credit for finding out the information about the annulment.
He took the credit.
Yeah, that he was did. Some
I read
shit,
it.
Man.
I read it in the master's personal diary.
I was transcribing this. I'm like, you didn't do anything. You actually ignored your wife.
Exactly. Yeah, you ignored her when she was telling you this big important thing that you didn't think was important. Yeah.
Oh, man. When he took credit for that, I just sat there. I started screaming at the television. And you know what? I wish because Jason was just at Walker Stalker London, and he did do a panel with Sam and Gilly. And yeah. I wish that I had seen this episode specifically for this scene before he left. So I could have been like, hey, Jason, ask him why Sam took the credit. Why? Why did Sam take the credit? Poor Gilly. Gilly's the reason why you're alive, dude. He would not have survived out there. He couldn't even make a fire.
Yeah, yeah. As much as I love Sam, you're totally right. He took credit for that. And I don't know, maybe we'll get an acknowledgement at some point. Well, that actually wasn't my number one. My number one is kind of from this episode, but it's also kind of more a general comment about these two characters that I've not heard anybody else make, unless I have not been listening close enough, is Bronn of the Blackwater and Jorah Mormont. I love these two guys. I love these two guys, and I think they're two sides of the same coin. You have Bronn, who is the consummate mercenary, to where he is going to go to whoever will give him the most money and the most power. Not offer him the most money and power, because, you know, Tyrion is constantly offering him more money and more power and more castles. Mm-hmm. And Bronn keeps turning him down. Because I think Bronn really believes that Cersei can pull off what she's going to do. And I think he's wrong, but that makes him very mercenary in his thinking. And Jorah is the other side of that coin, in that he is the consummate soldier, is that he is going to be loyal to his queen. He's going to be loyal to his country. He's going to be loyal to no matter what, because he believes that Daenerys can do what she's going to do. And I just really think these two guys are very, very much like, if one little change in their character, one little push one way could flip them completely. You know, if he had not been exiled to Essos, he could have easily become this kind of guy like Bronn. And if Bronn had been exiled to another country, you know, he could have, I think a little push either way, and these two guys could have swapped their characters.
Well, you know, I would never put Bronn and Jorah together, to tell you the truth, only because I think Bronn is led by money and Jorah is led by his loyalty to Daenerys. Who was it? It was Anwyn last week when she pointed out, and something I didn't even notice, but she pointed out that when Viserion died, everybody was watching the dragon fall in disbelief. Jorah was staring directly at Daenerys. Mm-hmm. He was looking at how this was affecting her. He has no other thoughts than her and serving her and making sure that she's okay. That kind of loyalty, that can't be bought. That is unconditional familial love. that he has for her. And I don't know that Bronn is capable of that.
No, and I think you're 100% correct. The only disagreement I've had is I don't think Jorah's, and I'm going to say the word love because that's the only way I can think of it. His love for Daenerys is not romantic. Like, I don't think he's jealous of Dario. I don't think he's jealous of Jon, of their romantic relationship with Daenerys. I honestly think he has, it's a very, like you just said, pure, unconditional loyalty and love and familial. It's familial. I just don't think it's romantic.
I think you're right. I think that he gave up on that when he had that conversation with Jon. I think that he saw that there's something between Jon and Daenerys, and he loves her enough to know to step out of the way.
Yeah, that's all I had. I just thought I'm not putting these two guys. I don't want you to think I'm not putting them in the same character in the same category because they're definitely totally different guys.
Yeah,
but I think one little push either way, and they could have been very different characters.
So my number one is very little. But I think it's important to recognize, and that is there's some foreshadowing. I think we have one of the greatest scenes in this entire episode, I think, is the scene between Theon and Jon.
I love that. I have that in my notes, the Jon and Theon conversation. So go ahead.
Yeah. So they talk about family, they talk about betrayal, they talk about identity, honor. Theon expands this talk into how he struggled with his identity growing up. He felt that he had an impossible choice put before him. Is he a Greyjoy or is he a Stark? And Jon gives him permission to be both.
Yeah.
He says, you don't have to choose. You can be both. You had a father in Ned more than you ever had in your actual father. However, you are a Greyjoy, and it's okay to identify as a Greyjoy and as a Stark. He gives him permission. And this, the whole time he's talking, and this, look, I was just telling my friend Jill earlier this morning, I watched this episode four times this week. Four times. That's too many times.
So, I think I'm at three. I think I'm at three for the week. So
yeah, let me tell you something. 6 hours is too long to spend on this episode. But it wasn't until my final watch where I realized that this could be a big indicator of foreshadowing with a struggle that Jon is most likely going to have in season 8. Mm-hmm. Is he a Stark or is he a Targaryen? He has been a Stark his whole life, and now he finds out that his father is not Ned. It's going to be Rhaegar. His name is not the same. His identity is completely different, and he's been treated differently. And he doesn't have his father to talk to about this. He doesn't have Ned to talk to about this. The only person I think that could help him in this situation is Howland Reed. Maybe. Who knows? I mean, Aemon Targaryen is gone. Ned is gone. Everybody is gone that could possibly help him with this. And I think that this conversation between Jon and Theon is important because I'm hoping that Theon can come back and tell Jon in season 8, you can be both.
Yeah, that's really good. I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good point. And I hope that's exactly what happens. I love my favorite part of that scene was, does Jon say, what are you doing here? You know, and Theon
what are you still talking to me for?
What are you still talking mm-hmm. for? Go get her, you know, go mm-hmm. get your sister. And then when he's having that fight on the beach and the guy tries to kick him, the guy's just beating on him. And I had a question mark because I don't know who that character is beating him. And you just think he's going to lose and he's going to cower again. And then the guy tries to kick him in the nuts.
There's no nuts. And
just you get that Theon gets that look in his eye where he realizes that wait, I can beat this guy, and he mm-hmm. and he turns and becomes the man that he's on the way to be, you know. So I hope that Euron has not killed what's the sister's name?
Yara.
Yara. I hope he hasn't killed her. I hope Theon's able to save her. But we'll see. We'll find out in season 8. That's going to be one of those subplot B stories probably that we're going to have to... We may have to wait a couple episodes to get it. I don't know.
I'm struggling to find a purpose for the Greyjoys in this entire story. I think that they're an outlier. Mm-hmm. Look, Theon is incredible. Alfie Allen is so underappreciated as an actor in this series because Theon was so vile for so long. Mm-hmm. That I hope that people at the end of this series are able to step back and really see Alfie Allen for his character, Theon Greyjoy, as just this remarkable feat in acting, because he has taken me from to the extremes with my feelings on a character. You know, we talk a lot about Jaime Lannister as a redemptive arc and how incredible it is to have watched it. But it's almost like this honorable arc. Mm-hmm. You know, Theon is that extreme where you have gone from a deep-seated hatred to like pumping your fist in the air triumphantly for a win that he gets. You know, there's really something remarkable and wonderful to that. So I don't know. I just, anyways, this scene though between Theon and Jon, I think is quite possibly one of the best ones in the episode.
It's really good.
What do you think?
No, it's a really good. It just credit to both those actors for being able to. There's sometimes when you watch a fantasy show like this and you realize that these people are making, these actors are so good that. And they hardly get acknowledged by any groups out there. They're talking about things that are fantastical and they're making us believe it, you know? And that is an acting, that is just as much an acting tour de force as anything, I think.
I completely agree with you. So do you have any notes?
I did. I think I'm looking at my notes now. I think the only thing I had that we haven't talked about, actually I have two, there's two things I have. The first thing is, Cersei realizing that there was only two dragons. I thought that was savvy. That was really cool. And the fact of Jaime trying to twist that away and go, well, maybe she left one behind. And Cersei's like, no. She was bringing her entire force. She wanted to show us everything she had. And it's kind of like, I've played poker in the past and it's kind of like Jaime's trying to think that, well, maybe she's trying to keep something in the back and not show you all her cards. And Cersei's like, no, she's showing me everything that she's got. And so I really like that she was savvy enough to figure that out and realize that there is a weakness here. But the problem is, and this is what we'll probably find out more next season, but the problem is that what she took as a weakness of Daenerys, she didn't realize is a strength of the Night King, is now a strength of the Night King.
But she doesn't really believe that that's as big of a threat as it is.
Yeah, she's stupid. it is. And the only other thing I had was, it's something that I noticed last night when I watched these episodes back to back, is in the previously on in this episode, Jon says, "Thank you, my queen." And when you actually watch the end of Beyond the Wall, he never says those words, not in the episode. Now, maybe there's a deleted scene out there or something where he says it, but they have this whole conversation where he calls her Danny and she says, oh, no one's called me Danny since my brother and you don't want to be in his company or something like that. And then he says, how about my queen? And she says, oh, you need to get your rest, and she leaves. And so it's a little thing, and it's probably just an HBO thing, and they've probably done it to us many times before where there's something in the previously on that's not actually in the episode.
Oh, like it's a little edit. But, that's interesting. But I didn't even catch it.
I didn't catch it until last night when I watched them back to back that he never. It's not until the previously on that we actually see him call her my queen. So I thought that was interesting.
That's very interesting. A note that I had that I couldn't figure out how to slip in anywhere for some reason. So Cersei and this ridiculous facade of a pregnancy, she uses her pregnancy against Tyrion. She uses her pregnancy against Jaime. But when, and she claims that, you know, she's only concerned with her unborn child, blah, 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 blah. When that white comes at her, now granted, seen the episode four times this week.
Yeah.
There is no hand over her stomach. There is no guarding herself as she has been doing since announcing her pregnancy to Jaime and now Tyrion. So it's this moment that makes me pretty sure that she's faking a pregnancy.
And I totally agree with you. I when I watched again last night, I noticed that when she jumps back from the white, her hands spread out and grab the arms of the chair. They don't, like you said, they don't cover up her stomach. They don't cover up, you know, there's nothing to try to defend herself. She just simply is taken aback. So I totally agree with you. I think it's fake. I didn't think that before, but I'm going to be in that camp now that I think she's faking it.
Yeah, that was one of the polls that I had on the Facebook page, and I think it was not a close poll.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. I could be wrong, but I think that was, you know, I've had multiple polls in the past couple of weeks on the Facebook page, and some of them are close. I mean, Arya and who do you want to die, Arya or Sansa? That was very close. Who do you want to die, Jon or Daenerys? That one was incredibly close. Is Tyrion a Targaryen? Was overwhelmingly yes.
Yeah.
And is Cersei pregnant? That was not, I think it was like 60-30.
Right. Yeah, the Tyrion as a Targaryen thing, I think it's going to be, I think he totally is, because except for the guys who ride the dragon, who Dany lets get on the dragon to ride it, the only people who've actually touched a dragon, right, is Dany, Jon, and Tyrion. I don't think Melisandre, I don't think she ever actually touched the dragon when she was, not Melisandre.
Oh, Missandei. Missandei, yeah.
I don't think she ever touched the dragon. Now, she was in the presence of the dragon, but the only three people that we've actually seen the dragons let walk up to them and touch them like on their nose is those three, who we now know two out of the three are definitely Targaryens. So I think that's a huge indication that I don't know how they would explain it in the show that he's a Targaryen, but it would be interesting. It would make
Bran.
Yeah, I guess Bran.
Just Bran.
Yeah, he would be the one. And it would make a lot of things fall into line. And I think then he could be, if Theon's not the one, Tyrion could then be the one to say to Jon, you can be both a Targaryen and a Stark. I'm a Lannister and a Targaryen. You're a Stark and a Targaryen.
Well, and Archmaester Rennie thinks that Jaime and Cersei are also Targaryens.
It wouldn't necessarily surprise me. I would be more inclined for these three. I would hope with just these three. So you could be right. I mean, it would be an interesting take on the whole family dynamic, because weren't the Targaryens, now again, I think this is getting into the books, weren't the Targaryens big on the incest thing? They were okay with it?
That's all they did.
Okay.
They kept the bloodline pure.
Okay. So that would explain the Jaime and Cersei attraction. That would explain the Jon and Dany attraction. That would, you know,
that would explain Tyrion's dwarfism, maybe.
Could be. That would definitely explain the dwarfism, sure.
I don't know if there's enough time to actually sew up all of this. A girl can dream.
Yeah, and it would make you, that would be one of those things that I would wonder if George R.R. Martin, because I know he has told the double D's, he has told them things that are going to be in the books, or he told them about the Hodor thing before it was revealed, because that hasn't even been revealed in the books yet, right? That's something.
Massive spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things that he's, now he could change it, obviously, when he writes the book, but.
I hope he doesn't.
No.
I can't wait to get his perspective and prose from it. Yeah, but that pretty much does it for my notes. I know we missed a whole bunch of stuff, but you know, it's an hour and a half episode, and man, I think we did a good job covering as much of it as we could.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we are going to take a little break, and we will be back with some Dragon's Breath and our worst ending segment. So stay with us. I've seen you burn them before. Fire and ice. You come on like a flame, then you turn a cold shoulder. Fire and ice. I wanna give you my love, but you just take a little piece of my heart. we're back with our worst ending. Deanne Rogers Tanksley says, my worst ending would be for all of our teenage dragons to get into a sibling spat, as teenagers will do, and end up burning everything and everyone. And since we know that the dragons can cover great distances in a short amount of time, this spat in midair would continue all the way to King's Landing and beyond, taking out the Iron Throne itself and this whole world that we've spent years falling in love with.
Lindsay Slitt says, my worst ending is what is likely going to happen when Dany finds out that Jon is the rightful heir to the throne, loses her shit, and becomes the antagonist of the story. I think Game of Thrones does a generally good job of promoting women, but I could see them following a standard put the man on the throne trope. I will be heartbroken if Dany is turned in the end. Ruined in the end, that would be.
I don't think so. I don't think that's what's going to happen. George R. R. Martin is a big feminist.
Yeah, I don't think that's, but could, I guess.
Who knows? It could be a man, it could be a woman. For all we know, it could be the Night King. Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, ambiguous. And he's generally ambiguous, right? We don't know. He, she.
Right.
So
yeah. He's a robot. Alicia Stout says, the Great War is over. The Night King and his army have been defeated thanks to Cersei Lannister and the Golden Company. Oh, jeez. She claims herself queen of the Seven Kingdoms and protector of the realm. Everyone must bend the knee. While in the throne room, a crown is placed on her head by the mountain. She immediately notices it is more beautiful than ever and encrusted with diamonds. It's also much bigger and doesn't quite fit right on her head. The crowd cheers and claps, some not as ecstatic, also clap out of courtesy. As she gets off of the Iron Throne to walk down the stairs, a dark figure comes out from behind the throne and stabs Cersei in the neck, killing her immediately. It is revealed that her attacker is none other than her brother lover, Jaime Lannister. Jaime, Jaime, Jaime! Everyone chants and cheers. He announces that he's now the king. He looks over to Sansa Stark and professes his love for her and tells her that he will marry her immediately. She looks around the room, shocked, but also thinks, okay, he's not so bad. It could be worse. Let's do it. They marry in front of everyone, and the crown is taken off of Cersei's head and placed on his. A perfect fit for a perfect king, says Jaime. As everyone gets quiet, Jaime begins to speak for the first time as the new king. With a raspy voice, he says, I was born in Braavos. Sansa, along with the rest of the crowd, looks around a bit confused and shocked. Then Jaime pulls off his face to reveal that it's not Jaime, but Littlefinger. Sansa puts her hands up to her face and screams. Fade to black. End credits. Game over.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, I think that's the best one I've heard.
That's the best worst ending yet. I still liked my Sean Bean ending, so the pitching the story to HBO executive Sean Bean, and he goes, nah, I don't want to do it.
Oh my gosh. Alicia, I'm in love with you right now. That was an amazing, amazing worst ending ever.
That is definitely
very well thought out.
Definitely the best. Are you still going to take those during season 8 as it progresses?
Oh, sure, yeah. If people want to send them in, absolutely. Change your mind every week. I don't care. Okay, now we have a bunch of feedback this week in our Dragon's Breath section, so let's go for it. Tiffany Ronimus says, and now our rewatch has ended. Man, what a trip it's been.
Alec Baelish says, I'm so sad not to hear a spoiler-full podcast and yet so excited for this last episode.
Me too. And when Holtzhausen says, I can't wait. Hashtag we are Steve.
Rebecca Appleby. I appreciate that. Rebecca Appleby says, greetings, Kristen and co-host. I truly enjoy listening to the podcast each week and love the rewatch, though I am listening more than watching as I wait for my partner to catch up so we can rewatch season 7 together before the new season premieres. Anyhow, I am also on a third read of the books. Wow. I had just finished listening to the Eastwatch episode and the discussions of Cersei's death by Arya and Jaime's face, and I then opened my book. I happened to be on a Tyrion chapter in A Clash of Kings. It is a discussion when Varys tells Tyrion his backstory, and they discuss the skilled assassin hired by Stannis. To which Tyrion responds, "I used to dream that one day I'd be rich enough to send a faceless man after my sweet sister. This was huge to me, especially having just listened to the podcast. Seems it is imminent, and I hope the show delivers."
Me too. She sent this a couple weeks ago. Actually, I've been saving this for this episode because I love it. I hope that that's foreshadowing.
That's really good. I like that. How was my Tyrion voice?
It was excellent. Dave Halberg, I know that guy, says, "Seven blessings, Lady Kristen, and Brother Steve of the Watch. It's going to be so great to hear from Steve about what he thinks now that he's finally caught up to the rest of us. I've really been enjoying his weekly call-ins, and I can't wait for his insight into this episode. My favorite part of the episode has to be when Baelish was trying to wrap his head around what the fuck just happened when Sansa said his name. The look of his face was priceless. Thanks and keep up the strong work." It's true.
I loved it. It was great. Lindsay Slit says, "Brienne and the Hound. Does it get better? Two proud parents of their little warrior Arya. All the stank faces at the meeting were great." I think Lena Headey has perfected resting bitch face. Poor John is so dumb. I feel like a smarter person. Tyrion or Varys should have seen Cersei's demands coming and told John ahead of time to lie. So what was it that stopped Cersei from killing Tyrion? Am I a moron, or was it the tiniest bit of love for him? That when she finally had the perfect opportunity, she couldn't do it. I've never been a Cersei fan or a hater. My feelings about her fluctuated, but the scene where she promised to help with the triumphant music playing in the background, I admit I was fooled. I was so happy. It's occurred to me that could be the ending none of us are thinking about. Could Cersei come around in the end and have a little bit of redemption? I certainly wouldn't mind an ending like that, but I'm soft. I want a happy ending despite knowing we won't get one. I love the scene with Theon and Jon. Jon is such a good man. He gave Theon back his integrity and strength when he certainly didn't have to. Oh, poor Littlefinger. You know how he dirtied his drawers. Sorry. You know he dirtied his he dirtied his drawers just a bit when she asked how he answered the charges. Sansa was on fire this scene. Did you notice he dropped his stupid creepy accent and spoke like a normal human at the end? Viserion blowing down the wall was, of course, amazing. Can't wait to hear your commentary on it. Well, we're here. Can't wait to experience the season with you guys. This rewatch has been fantastic. Thank you, Lindsay. That was great.
Mm-hmm. She has the best insight. I love it. She makes a really good point about Varys. Varys was very quiet. He had one line.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rob Boyko says, "Hello, Kristen, and whomever might be co-hosting today. I have some non-episode specific thoughts and questions that I thought could be used on an episode of the podcast if you didn't have too many emails and voicemails." So I got this as a side note. I got this about a month ago, maybe even more than a month ago. And I emailed him back and I said, there's actually another part of his email to this specific email that I'm going to use next week for our Hopes and Dreams episode, because I told him, I said, I want to use this for the very last episode. So I'm not ignoring it. I just want to let you know when I plan to use it. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. It could be argued that much of the Game of Thrones series and numerous storylines began as a result of Peter Baelish. He got the ball rolling on so many things and set up the framework for so much. He was villain, and I absolutely think he got what he deserved, but I feel like it happened too soon. I think his story ended appropriately, but I think it was cut short. It's not that I wanted to see him lie and manipulate more, but considering everything he was doing and building, I fear that there was never really any payoff. It was work with little reward, and maybe that reflects Littlefinger's methods, constantly doing something and making little steps forward toward total control over everything. To me, it just felt like they wanted to close off his story to streamline the last season, but I imagine the books might see his story come to a more of a climax before he meets the sharp part of a dagger. Thoughts?
I mean, I can see where they could have gone more, given him more story, but I think it's also a great way to wrap it up. But I see his point of this definitely could have been a storyline they could have drawn out throughout season 8, you know, to bring it all the way to the end. And in the books, George R. R. Martin might do that. He might drag it out longer. I don't know. What do you think?
I feel like we are going to see him. I feel like we're not done with Aidan Gillen yet. Mm-hmm. We're just not going to see him as Littlefinger. We're going to see him as Arya being Littlefinger.
Yeah, and I think since you said that earlier in the podcast, I think you're right. I think that's what we're going to see, and that's why it's so important that she slit his throat.
You know, I don't think that we're done with Littlefinger, but we are done with Littlefinger right. at the same time. Just strange. My opinion, it could be unpopular. I think that Littlefinger, the purpose of Littlefinger was over. The story couldn't propel any more forward with the Great War with Littlefinger still there. I don't see how Littlefinger can fit into the Great War.
Yeah, and what do you think is going to happen with the Vale? Do you think the Night King is just going to roll right through there?
I don't think Robin Arryn's going to last too long. Yeah. But that seems to be okay. So.
Exactly.
We have a few voicemails this week. The first voicemail we have is from Gwendolyn Figueroa.
Hi, Kristen. Hi, Steve. It's Gwen. Sending in feedback on the last episode. It was so good and so horrible all at the same time. But some of the points I wanted to talk about was just Clegane being Papa Bear and being happy about Arya, proud of his Arya, how she's a butt kicker now. So, yeah, that was cool, a little smirk. And when Clegane was talking to the mountain, I'm wondering if the Clegane Bowl is going to happen, because who was Clegane talking about? He was like telling him like you were waiting for him or who, I don't know. It was like he was talking about somebody else like coming after the mountain. So I was like, who is he talking about? So maybe if you guys have some insight on that, I don't know. And then, you know, Cersei's plan, you know, as much as I don't like her, I mean, I get where she's coming from, and I get her plan, and I get how she thinks that she's, like, making such a good choice, but she just really doesn't know what she's up against. I guess seeing that Walker was not enough for her to really understand what she's up against. Like, she has no idea. And then I am totally Team Ygritte. But I am warming up to John and Dany. Somewhat, you know, they don't know they're related. And they do love each other, and it's really sweet. So I'm warming up to them a little bit more, but when I first saw it, I was totally Team Ygritte. I'm like, no, Anyway, but I am warming up to it now. But yeah, can't wait. Ooh. Thanks so much. Bye.
Yeah, that's one thing that we didn't talk about was what do you think that who do you think the Hound was talking about with the mountain?
See, I wrote this. I jotted down this note, so I said it correctly. I just think, as much as I don't think the Hound would normally talk this way, I think it was just a badass way of referring to himself.
Oh, yeah. I thought maybe he saw in the flames how the mountain was going to go down, or he knows that Arya's coming for him.
That could be, but how's Arya going to get the mountain? It's a little, I mean, I just, like I said, the first one, as I'm listening to that, the first thought I had was, I just thought it was a badass way of referring to himself, going, you know, I'm coming for you, without just saying I'm coming for you. But maybe, I mean, you're right. He could have seen a lot in those flames that he didn't tell us about, or a lot more in those flames that he didn't tell us about. Maybe he did see. And I always thought, now, does she still have Needle, or is Needle gone?
No, she still has
Needle. Isn't Needle Valyrian steel?
Nope.
Oh, okay. I thought it was made from the remnants of something. When they split those two swords. Okay, then I was wrong.
No. Needle was given to Arya when Jon left for the Wall, and they were leaving for King's Landing, and he made her, he had the blacksmith at Winterfell make her a sword.
Okay. Okay. I thought it was, for some reason, I thought it was Valyrian steel. So the only Valyrian steel she has then is that dagger.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. So.
Which she'll use very well. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to, I can't wait. I can't wait to watch them all fight together. I just can't wait. Oh, there's only one more week left.
I know. It's exciting.
The next voicemail that we have is from our very own Archmaester Rennie.
Greetings, Kristen and Steve. As Anwen and Kristen said on last week's podcast, after this episode, we will all be Steve, since we'll all be watching the coming episodes for the first time. I think we should get t-shirts saying, "We are all Steve now." In this episode, Cersei says, "I know Ned Stark's son will be true to his word," speaking to Jon Snow. And I think we as the audience all say to ourselves, well, he's not Ned Stark's son, so he won't be true to his word, as Cersei expects. But I think that he will be, because in a very real way, even though he's not biologically Ned Stark's son, he is Ned Stark's son. And one of the things that points to this, I think, is what he, Jon, says to Theon when he says, "You don't need to choose. You're a Greyjoy and a Stark." And he is, in a way, foreshadowing his own situation of being both a Stark and a Targaryen. So Jon is pointing to the way in which Theon is functionally Ned Stark's son, since Ned Stark raised Theon, and Jon himself is Ned Stark's son, because Ned Stark raised Jon, even though he's not his biological father. Which means that Jon will always be, behaviorally, more like a Stark than a Targaryen, which is probably a very good thing. One thing I wanted to point out is that this episode is called The Dragon and the Wolf, which is meant to refer to Daenerys and Jon, but since Jon is himself both dragon and wolf, then Daenerys and Jon together are the dragon and the wolf, or maybe the dragon and the wolf and the dragon. So I think they needed to add another dragon to the episode title. So Kristen, now that we're all Steve, that we're all watchers instead of rewatchers, I'm really looking forward to all of us processing our inevitable grief together as we go through season 8.
Oh, she's great. I was almost hoping that you would have her on with us so that I wouldn't feel so ignorant, but I think I've done okay.
I think you've done an excellent job. I've really enjoyed having you on. And, you know, I love Rennie. I love it that this is like one of the first times ever that I had the same thought that she had.
Yeah.
So she's probably rubbing up on me a little bit. Because when she said, yeah, well, Theon can, you know, remind him that he's, you know, both a Stark and Targaryen. I'm like, I said that too.
That's great. Yeah, I love, she has some insights that have helped me out a lot.
She's wonderful. She is just so wonderful. And I, the two times that I've been lucky enough to podcast with her have been phenomenal. And I've just really, really enjoyed it. So our last voicemail is kind of going to be a weird experience for you, buddy. Let's see what old Steve had to say. Now, remind me, did you call in right after you watched it?
I think it was either after the very first watch or it might have been two watches. I can't remember.
Okay.
But it was real quick. Okay. Yeah.
Well, let's see.
Wow. What a great final episode. Hey, Kristen and Steve. This is Steve from the past. And just saying hi and sending out some thoughts on The Dragon and the Wolf. I just finished watching it for the first time. And wow, I can't believe the people who are such huge fans of this show that had to wait 20 months since then to now. Well, you're now. My, this is so meta. I'm going to stop trying to figure it out. But just a couple quick thoughts on the episode. I actually wrote in my notes, is Euron really running? Because I didn't believe that the moment when he did it. I didn't believe he was actually running away. I think Bronn, I like Bronn. It's he's an interesting character, though, because he's basically in it for himself. But if he had been tied to Daenerys, there's kind of a mirror between him and Jorah, I think. We could see some similarities and some differences, obviously. But I think him and Jorah really are mirror images of each other, because Jorah is definitely in this fight for Daenerys and for her, and Bronn is definitely for himself. But they're just soldiers. That's the way they see themselves anyway. Just soldiers. I love the line from the Hound, or actually it's Brienne who said it to the Hound about Arya. The only one who needs protecting is anyone who gets in her way. I love that line about Arya, and I didn't believe Cersei was gonna actually do a truce with them. That was just, and she kept saying Ned Stark's son, and I know I've been spoiled already knowing that Jon Snow is not, but I just thought it was kind of funny every time she said Ned Stark's son. I kept thinking to myself, he's not though, and Cersei's just a liar. I loved Sam when he walks in the room and Bran says that he's the Three-Eyed Raven, and Sam says, I don't know what that means. And Sam, I think we're all in the same boat with you there, brother. But can't wait to hear what I thought, or am going to, so weird. Anyway, talk to you later.
So I guess it was the very first time I had watched it, because that started my whole comparison between Bronn and Jorah, was where I started that thought. So,
that's awesome. Yeah, you know. What did you say? What did you say at the end there? With Sam and Bran.
Yeah,
that is one of my favorite Sam moments. Is I don't know if you were on the monthly call in a couple nights ago, but I was telling Jason, I said that was one of my favorite all time Sam moments, when he goes, "I became the Three Eyed Raven," and Sam's like, "Oh, okay."
I don't know what that means.
I would
love that. I just thought that was such a funny line, and it was so exactly what we have been saying for the last, or everybody has been saying for the last, whatever, three or four episodes since he's announced himself, and since he became the Three-Eyed Raven, we're all like, what does that mean?
Such a funny thing for him to say. Yeah. I just love it. I love Sam, except for when he's taking Gilly's crap.
Yes.
Stupid Sam.
I like that I'm consistent, at least in some of my comments. So.
Yeah. It looks like you didn't change your mind too much. No. Well, thanks, Steve, for your feedback. I love it that you sent in a voicemail. That's wonderful. Okay, well, that's our show. Thanks for joining us. Steve, thank you so, so much for coming on today and closing out this rewatch with me and with everybody else. I couldn't be more thrilled that you are our final guest. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Next week, we are going to be doing a Hopes and Dreams episode for the upcoming season. So there is one more little episode. It's going to be myself and Jason and possibly Rima and Sean of Strange Indeed. And the four of us are going to be just giving a nice little precursor to season 8. Our hopes and our dreams, our fears and our nightmares, whatever it is, we're just going to kind of talk about the upcoming season and what we're hoping for. So if you want to send in your own hopes and dreams or your own fears and nightmares, you can do that in any of the following ways. #WeAreSteve.
If you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email us at dragons@podcastica.com. That's how I do it. We can you can also go to our webpage, where you can submit feedback as well, and that's housepodcastica.com.
You can check out our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/housepodcastica. That's also where you can find a lot of polls that I'm putting up and extra information. I just put up red carpet photos from the premiere a couple nights ago. And you will never, ever, ever be spoiled with anything on that page. I can give you a 110% guarantee, because I am real weird about that. Just ask any of my friends.
And we're also on Twitter and Instagram at housepodcastica.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts at podcastica.com. Walking Deadcast just ended, but they do have one more episode to go. Jason was in London for the past couple of weeks, and so him and Karen are actually going to be a week late in their final episode for the season. Strange Indeed is in the middle of covering Umbrella Academy. And Steve, why don't you tell everybody about your podcast?
So Mark Kirkman and I, we do a podcast called Panels to Pixels, where we take a lot of the Netflix shows, the Netflix Marvel shows, and we do reviews on them. Sometimes we do one episode, sometimes we do two episodes. We've also review some of the Marvel movies. We are currently, I think both of us are going to try to see Shazam this weekend, and so we may send out a quick review of Shazam. So anything that has to do with comics to movies, Panels to Pixels, as our podcast is called, that's what we do. And currently we're in The Punisher season 2. We should be wrapping that up next week, I think.
I gotta tell you, the title of your podcast is just fantastic.
That was all Mark. He came up with that, and yeah, it's a great, I love it.
Special thanks to Break of Reality for our intro music. If you want to check them out, you can do so on YouTube or on their website, breakofreality.com. Thanks to Kirk Manley for our podcast art and Ben Beck for website design. Kirk's work can be checked out on his website, studiokm.com, and Ben Beck can be found at thenextlevelnetwork.com, which is where you can also find Panels to Pixels. Cersei.
The Mountain.
The Night King.
Euron Greyjoy.
Melisandre.
Bronn of the Blackwater.
Hashtag We Are Steve.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
New Jersey's got a lot of historic wows, from Victorian beach towns to Revolutionary War battlegrounds. Explore wow after wow at more than 463 historic landmarks, in museums, lighthouses, and over 58 state and national parks. It's one wow after another, you get it. Find your wow at visitnj.org/history. New Jersey, little state, lot of wow.